You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Everybody, back to the Bareback Facts, and today we're going to be talking about a legend that is very near and dear to my heart. We're talking about the legend of Beowulf, one of the oldest and probably one of the most famed legends ever written down and ever recounted for us in the modern age. Before we do, I'd like to remind you all that we do have a call-in number here. It's 718-508-9883, and now with the formalities out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome to my show. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with the legend of Beowulf, I'll give you a little bit of a history on the tale. Beowulf itself is a heroic poem and is considered by many to be the highest achievement of Old English literature and the earliest European vernacular epic. It deals with the events of the early 6th century, and it is believed to have been composed between 700 and 750. So, pretty old, right? Although originally untitled, it was later named after the Scandinavian hero Beowulf, whose exploits and character provide its connecting theme. There's no evidence of a historical Beowulf ever having lived, but some characters, sites, and events in the poem can be historically verified, which is not uncommon for stories such as this. People tended to use real locations to add a sense of realism to their story. The poem itself did not appear in print until 1815. It is preserved in a single manuscript that dates to circa the year 1000 and is known as the Beowulf Manuscript. It falls into two parts. It opens in Denmark, where King Hrothgar sits in his mead hall Herat, which has been ravaged for years by nightly visits from an evil beast known as Grendel. From there, the tale takes off, and Beowulf shows up and becomes the hero we need and the hero we deserve for the time. So from then on, guys, we will now get into the specifics of the tale. Now that we've got our brief history out of the way, let's talk a little bit about the themes before we do a brief summary of the tale itself. So some of the themes within Beowulf are pretty much a given as far as, you know, epics go. One of the major themes within Beowulf is honor, glory, obviously big themes when you talk about heroes, but also there are a number of other themes within the book, or within, well, not the book necessarily, but within the saga itself that take place. Greed, envy, and of course, love. But predominantly, one of the major themes within this are the themes of paganism and Christianity, and an attempt to sort of reconcile the two. So in historical terms, the poem's characters would have been Norse pagans. Now, the historical events of the poem take place before the Christianization of Scandinavia, yet the poem was recorded by Christian Anglo-Saxons who had mostly converted from their native Anglo-Saxon paganism around the 7th century. Now, both Anglo-Saxon paganism and Norse paganism share a common origin, as both are forms of Germanic paganism. Beowulf thus depicts a Germanic warrior society in which the relationship between the lord of the region and those who serve under him was of paramount importance. In terms of the relationship between characters in Beowulf to God, one might recall the substantial amount of paganism that is present throughout the work. Those of you who have read it would not, but you know, there are a number of literary critics. Some argue that the Beowulf poet arguably tries to send a message to readers that during this period, the Anglo-Saxon time period, regarding the state of Christianity in their own time. Some have argued that the intensified religious aspects of the Anglo-Saxon period inherently shaped the way in which the poet alludes to paganism as presented in Beowulf. Obviously, in much of the writing, it's treated as sort of foreign and very superstitious and silly. It's postulated for us as being silly. We look back and we're supposed to look back at the story and say, oh, we know better. Those silly pagans back then, they didn't know how things worked. It's clear we know what's going on, but they don't know. They don't know. The poet also, many people would also say that the poet arguably calls on Anglo-Saxon readers to recognize the imperfect aspects of their supposed Christian lifestyles. So some critics have said that Beowulf is a critique of Christianity in a way, and tries to poke holes in the Christian faith. In other words, the poet, according to these critics, is referencing that their Anglo-Saxon heathenism. In terms of the characters of the epic itself, some would say that the readers are impressed by the courageous acts of Beowulf and the speeches of King Hrothgar, but one is ultimately left to feel sorry for both men as they are fully detached from supposed Christian truth. Therefore, this would make you say that despite the fact that they're both heroic and great men, they're going to fall short of the mark for us because they're not Christian. They don't know the truth of God. So because of this, they're going to be seen as less than. They're not as heroic as we would be led to believe because they're blinded by their paganism. They're stuck in their ways. Now, the relationship between the characters of Beowulf and the overall message of the poet regarding their relationship with God is largely debated amongst readers and literary critics alike, as these tend to be. At the same time, another critic named Richard North argues that the Beowulf poet interpreted Danish myths in Christian form, as the poem would have served as a form of entertainment for a Christian audience, and states, as we are yet we are no closer to finding out why the audience of Beowulf liked to hear stories about people routinely classified as damned. The question is pressing, given that the Anglo-Saxons saw the Danes as heathens rather than as foreigners. Grendel's mother and Grendel are described as descendants of Cain, a fact which some scholars link to the Cain tradition, which you can look at David Williams' work, Cain and Beowulf, a Study in Secular Allegory, from the University of Toronto's press. But there's still more disagreement. And the reason we're talking about these before we get into the actual, meaty details of this awesome story is because I want to give you guys some semblance of an idea of how famous this work is. It's been hotly debated for a number of years as to what the writer's talking about, what the writer's trying to say. And I'm going to give my take on what the writer's trying to say as well. Now, as to the meaning and nature of the poem, is it a Christian work set in a Germanic pagan context? The question suggests that the conversion from the Germanic pagan beliefs to Christian ones was a prolonged and gradual process over a period of several centuries, and it remains unclear the ultimate nature of the poem's message in respect to religious belief at the time it was written. Robert F. Yeager notes that the facts that form the basis for these questions, that the scribes of Cotton Vitellius VIII were Christian beyond doubt, and it is equally sure. So the scribes who transcribe this story are saying that it is equally, according to Yeager, were Christian, and that's beyond a shadow of a doubt because most people at this time that are translating things are probably Christian or have something to do with the church because that's who the scribes were. And it is equally sure that Beowulf was composed in a Christianized England since conversion took place in the 6th and 7th centuries. The only biblical references in Beowulf are to the Old Testament, and Christ is not once mentioned. The poem is set in pagan times, and none of the characters is demonstrably Christian. In fact, when we are told what anyone in the poem believes, we learn that they are pagans. Beowulf's own beliefs are not expressed explicitly throughout the story, and though he offers eloquent prayers to a higher power, addressing himself to the Father Almighty or the wielder of all, Were those the prayers of a pagan who used phrases the Christian subsequently appropriated, or did the poem's author intend to see Beowulf as a Christian hero, symbolically refulgent with Christian virtues? The location of the composition of the poem is also intensely disputed. Everybody wants to say where it originally comes from. Everybody's trying to lay claim to it. And then we have other critiques of the work. Some people have stepped away from the religious critiquing of the work. One Stanley B. Greenfield has suggested that references to the human body throughout Beowulf emphasize the relative position of thanes to their lord. He argues that the term shoulder companion could refer to both a palarm as well as a thane, or Asher, who was valuable to his lord. With his death, Hrothgar turns to Beowulf as his new arm. Also argues that the foot is used for the opposite effect, only appearing four times in the poem. It's used in conjunction with a man described by Beowulf as weak, traitorous, and cowardly. Greenfield also notes that it is described as at the king's feet, as a member of the foot troops. So there's discussion of politics and warfare as being predominant themes within the tale. Or could it have all been wrong? Could we all have been wrong about this amazing poem? Could it have nothing to do with religion and nothing to do with politics? Could it have perhaps been an amazingly awesome written story that was meant to entertain the people of the time and put into terms that they could understand? I think that might be closer to the case. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty, as they say, and get into the story. As I mentioned, opens in Denmark, where King Hrothgar sits at his splendid mead hall, Herat. For 12 years, he's visited nightly by an evil monster named Grendel, who carries off its warriors and devours them, leaving nothing behind. Unexpectedly, a young man by the name of Beowulf, handsome, strong, and proud, arrives. Prince of the Geats, an area in southern Sweden, arrives with a small band of retainers and offers to cleanse Herod of its monster. Now, Beowulf's arrival is not one of chance. He has arrived seeking a name for himself. He has come to cement his legacy as a great warrior, and to do so, he has decided to take on the challenge of ridding Hrothgar of his curse, the curse of Grendel. Now, Hrothgar himself is astonished at the little-known hero's daring, but welcomes him, and after an evening of feasting and much courtesy, and some discourtesy at the hands of the king's retainers, who question Beowulf's ability to deliver on his promise to rid the king of Grendel. They claim that Beowulf is a young stripling, a young upstart, young buck who doesn't know what he's talking about. How could he know the strength of Grendel? They've seen grown men snatched in the night, devoured whole by Grendel. Strong fighting men. But Beowulf is no ordinary man, as they are soon to find out. Now, after these exchanges, in which Beowulf informs those who have been discourteous to them that he is not afraid of Grendel, that he will watch the night, that he will become the one who does what no other man has been able to do. He will slay the beast. The king retires, leaving Beowulf in charge. The king retires from the hall and says, "You know what, Beowulf, you've been talking a big game. I'm going to let you be in charge of things. You and your men can stay here in the hall tonight." And he advises them, if they not fall asleep at their post, as Grendel is swift and strong and has snatched men grown whole and hale from their beds in the night and devoured them before they could put up so much as a fight. As all the men turn in for the night and the people of the house fall asleep, Beowulf and his men sit and begin to doze, waiting, full on mead and feasting. Beowulf is not really asleep. A few of his retainers are still awake during the night, as was his custom for the last 12 years. Grendel returns from the moors, drenched in mud and carrying with him his foul odor. He rends the heavy doors open and devours one of the sleeping retainers of Beowulf, realizes too late that Beowulf cannot easily be defeated. He grapples with Beowulf, whose powerful grip he realizes quickly that he cannot escape. Unlike every other man that he's ever grappled with, Beowulf is holding his own. Grendel becomes afraid. Beowulf is not afraid. Beowulf knows that he has the beast. As Grendel wrenches and desperately tries to get free, Beowulf delivers punch and punch after punch. He's unarmed at this time, except for his own bare hands. He had boasted to the king hours earlier that he would defeat Grendel with nothing but his bare hands, and he aimed to deliver on his promise. As Grendel attempts to get away, Beowulf rips his arm off. Grendel is able to flee, but he is mortally wounded. When the men of the house wake to the commotion, they find nothing but blood and Beowulf standing unscathed. The next day is one of rejoicing. Inherit. The men celebrate Beowulf's great triumph. They sing great songs of Beowulf and his achievement. For he has managed to fend off the beast, Grendel. Now, before we continue on, I want to offer a little bit of a backstory for Beowulf as well. I mentioned that it wasn't by chance that Beowulf arrives to the halls of, and I'm going to give you a little insight into who Grendel is as well. So, we'll start with Beowulf. Beowulf is a young prince from the kingdom of the Geats, which is in southern Sweden at this time. Beowulf is a thane of Hygelac, king of the Geats. And as he sits in the hall, he's told a tale. Beowulf, a young warrior looking to make a name for himself, hears tidings of Grendel's attacks. He hears stories of a monster who is ravaging the countryside, stealing grown men from their beds. He has the brave King Hrothgar too terrified to even leave his home. In this moment, Beowulf resolves to the king of the Geats that he will go to their aid. He will stand, he will go to Denmark, and he will liberate them from this terror. But what is this terrifying beast who haunts the moors and marshes, who sleeps in the fens and heath? We're told, according to the epic, that Grendel is a wretched being, along with the monsters and elves and sea beasts and giants, who was a descendant of Cain himself, whom the Lord had banished from mankind to the slaying of Abel. So in essence, we are told that Grendel comes from the source of all that is evil, human wickedness. He is wickedness incarnate. He's the most vile and repulsive beast you can imagine. But what was it, how was it that tales of Grendel could reach Beowulf so far away? Well, it wasn't just the nightly attacks for 12 years that finally reached the country of the Geats to tell Beowulf. It wasn't just 12 years of suffering. Grendel attacked during the night before this. Some nights before Beowulf was told, following an evening of mead drinking, the Danish warriors were fast asleep. And in their drunken slumber, Grendel kicked in the doors and seized 30 men, carrying them back to his lair. At dawn, The survivors discovered their great loss, and they saw the monster's tracks leading away from Herod. But it was too late to save his victims, for he left none alive. This was the start of these loathsome attacks. It all started when Grendel arrived and seized 30 men. From that point on, he came to terrorize the hold of Herod. He came to strike fear into the hearts of men. And for 12 long years, he succeeded. Until the tales of his reign of terror reached the country of the Geats, where Beowulf, the side of his king, he immediately outfitted his ship for the journey, chose 15 men to accompany him, and sped across the waves. He made the journey within 2 days. Upon meeting Beowulf, thought he was boastful, but looked upon him and knew that he was different. When he arrives in Hrothgar's kingdom, he's greeted. He and his men are in the livery of war. They are cloaked from head to toe in steel. They arrive, and a warrior asks the heroes about their lineage. Where have you come from? With your shields and war shirts, visored helmets and spears. Where have you come from? Who are you that you would come here in the armaments of war, the warriors ask. And he says, I am Hrothgar's servant and herald. Never before have I seen such a band of strangers in such a courageous mood. I've never seen anyone who looks like you. Who are you? And Beowulf answers calmly and boldly, we are table companions of King Hygelac. Beowulf is my name. I will reveal my errand to the sun. The herald quickly went to Hrothgar, now an old and white-haired man, and says, Geatish warriors have arrived here from across the sea, and they call their chieftain Beowulf. They have requested to speak with you. Hrothgar speaks in response and says that I knew Beowulf when he was but a boy. His father was called Ithkjal, and he has come as a loyal friend. Moreover, seafarers have reported that Beowulf is strong in battle. The grip of his hand is said to have the strength of 30 men. Bid him and his band of kinsmen welcome among the Danish people. And so we are introduced to Beowulf, the man who is said to have the strength of 30 men. Keep in mind that I did mention when we backtracked that Grendel once stole 30 men from their beds in the span of a single night. The herald returns. He says, my victorious lord, bid me to say that he knows who you are. He knows that you are a nobleman. You are welcome here, and you may come inside to Hrothgar wearing your armor and helmets, but you must leave your weapons outside until you have spoken. You may not dishonor my hall with your weapons. Beowulf approaches Hrothgar and then speaks, hail to thee, Hrothgar. In my native land, I have learned of Grendel's deeds. Seafarers report that this great hall is useless for all men after nightfall. Knowing my great strength, my people urged me to come to your aid. They have seen me return from battle stained with the blood of my foes. I have destroyed a race of giants. I have slain sea beasts by night, and now I have come to cleanse Herod of the evil that has come upon it. Further, I have learned that Grendel, the giant monster, has no fear of weapons, so I shall fight him with my bare hands, without sword, without mail, or without shield. And if I fail, I've no concern about my burial. Grendel shall devour my corpse. Do, however, send my chainmail back to Hygelac. It is the best of armor inherited from Hrethel and the work of Wayland. This is how Beowulf introduces himself to the king. He kicks himself into the doors. He walks up to the king and says, hail to thee, king of the hall. I have come to solve your problem. These are my deeds. I have killed men. I have killed giants. I have slain sea monsters. And now I have come to save you. I have come to kill your enemy. And I will do so with my bare hands. Your enemy says he fears no weapons. that men can forge, so I shall not fight him with weapons that men can forge. I shall do so with my bare hands. He does not fight with weapons, nor shall I. These are the bold statements that Beowulf comes into the halls with. And as I revealed to you already, Beowulf delivers. Hrothgar is thankful for the arrival of Beowulf. Sorrow that I tell you what shame and grief that Grendel has caused us. Many of my best warriors have fallen victim to his horrid clutch. Often my warriors have boastfully vowed while drinking their ale to take vengeance, but the next morning the mead hall has been stained with their blood. Join us now and feast, and share with my men how you plan to achieve victory. It is during this time that one such warrior by the name of Unferth is the one who disrespects Beowulf. He's jealous of the attention that Beowulf is getting and seeks to stir up a quarrel. He speaks and says, "Are you the Beowulf who foolishly challenged Breca to a swimming contest, risking your lives in the deep water? No one could turn you away from the foolhardy venture, and the two of you swam out in the ocean. For 7 nights, the two of you battled the waters, but he had the greater strength and outlasted you. The waves drove him ashore on the coast of Norway, and he was proclaimed the winner. I expect even worse results for you with your contest against Grendel." And Beowulf answers, "Unferth, my friend, in your drunkenness, you have said much about my adventure with Breca. Now I will tell the truth of what happened. For when we were still boys, Breca and I had boasted that one day we would test our strength at sea, and we did as we had spoken in our youth. To defend ourselves against the whales, we swam carrying naked swords in our hands, and neither of us gained an advantage over the other one. And thus we swam out together for 5 nights until finally the cold waves drove us apart. The sea fish grew angry, but my shirt of chainmail protected me. An evil monster dragged me to the bottom, but I was able to stab the creature with the point of my sword and then dispatched him with my hand. Beowulf continued, other creatures attacked me as well, but I killed them all with my sword, and never again would they hinder seafarers. With the morning light, the waves were still. Destiny had not doomed me to die. Instead, I had slain 9 sea monsters with my sword." I escaped from all the perils, and the current finally carried me to the land of the Finns. Unferth, I have never heard such exploits on your part, neither you nor Breca has ever performed so goodly. If you were as fierce in battle as you claim to be, the heath monster Grendel would not have been so successful in his attacks against the Danish people. He kills, and he feasts without fear of the Danes, but I will show him the strength and courage of the Geats. After that, whoever will may drink mead in this great hall will do so without fear." And the gray-haired king, Hrothgar, rejoiced in these words as he now trusted Beowulf for his help. Laughter and joyous words rang out throughout the hall. And it was in this time that the people decided to retire for the evening. And Beowulf and his kinsmen in arms kept watch in the hall. All the watchmen save one fell asleep. And that one was Beowulf. And as I mentioned before, Beowulf and Grendel would struggle. They would fight. They would claw at one another. But Beowulf came the victor. Now, we're going to take a short commercial break, and when we come back, I'm going to regale you all with the next part of this tale. And the next part of this tale is one of celebration and then one of challenge. As Beowulf is not content to this, he has other tales that he is ready to weave. So before we go to commercial, guys, I'd like to remind you all that we do have a proud new sponsor here at Totally Driven Entertainment. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisBraleyPresents.com.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisBraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Now we're gonna get to the next part of Beowulf. Now, as I mentioned before, Beowulf was able to destroy Grendel. He was able to kill him. After this, the people, they celebrated his... Now, as the teller of tales says, warriors from near and far assembled at Herod to behold the foe's tracks, which led to the mare of water demons. Its waters were seething with blood, and its waves were mingled with gore. There in the depths he gave up his heathen soul to hell. With a rejoicing, the warrior returned to Herod, and to great celebration. One of the king's thanes, who knew old tales without number, cleverly composed a new story, a truthful tale, narrating Beowulf's adventure. He also told everything he'd heard of the Volsunga saga and of Sinfjolti. Straight away, Herod was adorned for a great feast, and celebration began. Each man that had crossed the sea with Beowulf was given gifts. They were sung. The celebration continued with food and wine and regaling of more tales. When evening fell, Hrothgar returned to his lodgings. The guards, as they had done before, cleared the benches and covered them with bedding and pillows. However, one of the men who fell asleep that night would never rise again. They fell asleep, but one paid dearly for his rest, an avenger, Grendel's mother. The woman monster brooded over her woes. A descendant of Cain, she too lived in the wilderness, removed from the joys of men. She came to Herod determined to seek revenge for the death of her son. She clutched one of the heroes in his sleep, hastily, a favorite thane of Hrothgar, and retrieving Grendel's arm, she retreated to her lair. Beowulf was not there, for he had been given another lodging place, awakened the warriors in the hall, sounded the alarm. Hrothgar mourned the murder of his thane. He sensed who had done the evil deed, for he had heard from the people dwelling in the countryside of two night stalkers of the marshes and moors, one like unto a woman, the other in the image of a miscreated man. They were said to dwell amongst the wolf-haunted slopes, savage fen paths and windswept cliffs where mountain streams fall, shrouded in the midst of the headlands. He beseeches Beowulf and says, "Once again, help rests with you alone. Seek out this savage and cheerless spot if you dare. I will reward you with great treasure as I did before if you succeed in getting there alive." Beowulf replies, "Sorrow not. It is better for a man to avenge his friend than to mourn exceedingly. Each one of us will one day reach the end of worldly life. Therefore, let him who may win glory before he dies. That is a warrior's greatest boon at life's end. Now let us follow the tracks of Grendel's mother. I promise you this, she shall not escape." The king celebrates Beowulf. The troop follows Beowulf. They see serpents and dragons swimming in the water and sea monsters lying along the headland slopes. They sound the battle horn, and the creatures speed away, but not before Beowulf kills one of them. Then Beowulf, taking no thought for his life, puts on his armor of chainmail and a helmet fitted with boar figures so that no sword could bite it. He picks up the sword Hrunting by name that Unferth had lent him, one of the greatest among ancient treasures. Its iron blade was stained with poison and hardened with the blood of battle. Taking leave of Hrothgar, Beowulf set forth into the mare. He took better part of a day before he sighted the bottom. Who'd lived there for 100 seasons soon discovered his presence, and she seized the warrior with her claws. His ringed armor but barely protected him, and she did him no harm, but she did drag him deeper within her dwelling. And the hero saw that he was in a hall where the water could do him no harm. He attacked the mighty mare-woman, the she-wolf of the deep, with his sword, but he found that he could not wound her with it. Throwing the famous sword to the ground, he again trusted in his strength. He seized Grendel's mother by the shoulder and threw her to the floor. She fought back fiercely, causing him to stumble and fall, and she sat on him, stabbing him at him with her dagger. But again, his coat of chainmail protected him. Finally, he gains his feet. Then, hanging on the wall, an old sword hung from the Age of Giants. It was the choicest of weapons, but it was a sword meant for giants, too heavy for any man to carry into battle. Still, the great hero seizes the hilt and savagely strikes out at the monster, and the blow catches her at the neck, slicing off her head. Suddenly, light fills the place, and the victorious warrior looks about. He sees Grendel's body, and as a final act of vengeance, Beowulf cuts off his lifeless head. On the shore, Hrothgar and his men were watching the mare. Seeing the troubled waves mingled with blood, they feared the sea wolf had torn Beowulf to pieces, and they lamented. At the ninth hour of the day, the Danes returned to their homes, but the Geats, Beowulf's comrade at arms, remained there, sick at heart, mourning his death. Meanwhile, the sword in Beowulf's hand began to waste away. Drenched in blood, it melted away like an icicle at winter's end, and Beowulf saw great treasures there in the hall, but all that he took away was Grendel's head and the hilt of the sword, its blade having wasted away. He swam to the surface, and his valiant thanes rejoiced in seeing him safe and sound. They returned to Herod, bearing Grendel's head upon a spear. And Beowulf speaks to the king, "Behold this token of victory. Behold me. I nearly perished, for the sword great Hrunting proved ineffective in my struggle against the fiend. But at last I saw an old and mighty sword hanging upon the wall, and with this sword I slew the beast. Her blood melted the great sword's blade, but the hilt I have carried away is a sign that henceforth your men may sleep peacefully in Herod." And with these words, Beowulf presented to the king the ancient work of giants, the hilt, created before the flood could destroy the giant race. Its guard was of shining gold, graven correctly, with runic letters and brightly adorned with snakes. Hrothgar spoke, "Dear Beowulf, best of men, keep yourself from arrogance and envy. You are now at the peak of your power, but with age your strength will wane, and with time death shall overcome you." The next morning Beowulf announced his desire to return home. Thanks, he returned the sword runting to Unferth, generously praising the ancient weapon. He was a man of noble spirit. Beowulf spoke to Hrothgar and said, "We seafarers now shall return to our king Hygelac. You have been good to us. If beyond the waters I learn that you are in need again, I shall forthwith return with 1,000 warriors to help you." Hrothgar answers, "Because of you, there will always be peace between our people, the Geats and the Danes. Feuds and strife from the past are now behind us." The aged king, unable to contain his grief at Beowulf's parting, gave the hero additional treasures. Upon returning, Hygelac greets the hero ceremoniously. The latter's adventures, he asks, "How did you fare upon your journey to help the Danes?" And he replies, "My battle with Grendel is known to many." Then he recounts in detail his entire adventure, his arrival at Harad, his hand-to-hand fight with Grendel, and his slaying of the monster's mother at the bottom of the mare, and his reward of great treasures at the hand of King Hrothgar. Beowulf concludes his account by praising the generosity of the king. "He followed courtly custom. He withheld nothing that was my due, and I wish now to give to you, my king, the great treasures that he gave me as a reward." Beowulf then had the arms and treasures brought forth, and he told the story behind each heirloom. Hygelac responded by presenting Beowulf Hrethel's sword, a famous heirloom. Furthermore, he gave him 7,000 hides of land in a hall. Then he named him prince and successor to his own throne. At Hygelac's death, Beowulf became king, and for 50 years he ruled wisely, until a terror visited the land of the Geats. For so the tale was told, that a great treasure lay hidden in a burrow, in an upland barrow, but all those who buried it died before bequesting it to their surviving kin. As they are wont to do, a malicious dragon found the hoard and assumed possession of it, and for 300 winters he jealously guarded the treasure. Till one day, a foolish thief broke into the hoard and stole a golden cup. He was not a willful thief, but a runaway slave who had escaped a cruel master. Discovering the treasure by chance, the thief took the cup, hoping to pacify his master with it. Discovering his loss, the dragon, however, emerged from his lair to seek revenge. He spewed forth flames and destroyed many dwellings by fire, including Beowulf's own home, the best of halls. Once again, facing a life-and-death conflict with a superhuman foe, Beowulf reminisced about the contests and victories of his earlier life. Ever mindful of a king's duty toward his people, he vowed, "In the days of my youth, I ventured on many battles, and even now will I, aged guardian of my people, challenge this destroyer, if he will come forth from his den to meet me." Beowulf advanced to the dragon's lair alone, trusting in his single strength. That is no coward's way. With a clear voice, he bellowed into the cave to the serpent and challenged him to appear. The evil beast's breath emerged from the rocks, and the earth quaked, and the spirit appeared, and the Lord of the Geats swung his mighty shield against the awful foe and then struck at him with his ancestral sword. But it had no effect. The blade failed to penetrate the hide of the dragon. Beowulf knew in this moment that he was doomed to leave this earth forever against his will, as is the fate of all men. Before long, the two fighters confronted one another again. The serpent plucked up his courage and renewed his attack. Beowulf's companions had all fled into the woods to save their lives, and only one of them would come to the Lord's aid. The lone brave companion was a beloved warrior named Wiglaf. Seeing his threatened lord, Wiglaf remembered the many benefits that Beowulf had given him in the past. He put sword and shield and advanced through the deadly fumes to help his lord. "Beloved Beowulf," he said, "in your youth you swore that you would not let your fame decline as long as you lived. You must now defend your life with all your might, and I shall help you." Hearing these words, the dragon attacked a second time, and the serpent's flaming breath turned Wiglaf's shield to ashes, so the young warrior was forced to seek refuge behind his kinsman's shield. Beowulf was intent on glory. He he strove for it. He drove his sword Nagling into the dragon's head, and so fierce was the blow that it shattered the blade. As many have heard the tale, Beowulf's hand was so strong that no sword could withstand his full strength. The fiery dragon would attack a third time, seizing Beowulf by the throat with his sharpened teeth, and the hero's blood would flow forth in streams. I have heard how Biglaf showed unceasing courage and skill in the king's great need. The young hero, instead of attacking the dragon's head, aimed his sword blows a little lower, wounding the beast such that the fire began to wane. Beowulf recovered somewhat, and drawing his short sword, he cut the serpent in two. Thus they struck down the foe together. The two noble kinsmen destroyed him. But this was the king's last hour of victory, his final worldly deed. The wound that the dragon had given Beowulf began to burn and swell, and knowing that his appointed days on earth were now at an end, Beowulf spoke, and he said, 50 winters I have ruled this people, during which time no neighboring king has dared to attack us. At home, I have accepted my fate. I have sought no quarrels and have sworn no false oaths. In all this I can take joy, although now I suffer from fatal wounds. Beowulf further asked Wiglaf to seek out the dragon's treasure and describe it to him, thus giving him comfort knowing about this part of the legacy that he was leaving to his country. And I have heard how Wiglaf descended into the barrow where he saw the great hoard, jewels, gold, cups, vessels, and arm rings. Filling his arms with treasures, Wiglaf rushed back to the king and found him bleeding and near death. Seeing the treasure, Beowulf spoke, I give thanks that I was able to gain these precious things for my people before I died. I paid for this treasure hoard with my aged life, and you must now fulfill the needs of the people with it. I can no longer be here. After my body has been burned, have the warriors build a memorial mound for me on a coastal promontory. Seafarers will call it Beowulf's Mound. The generous king then gave the young warrior his golden neck piece, his helmet, his ring, and his coat of chainmail, then told him, enjoy them well. He turns to Wiglaf and says, you are now the last of our king. Fate has taken away all my kinsmen, and now I must follow them. And these would be the old king's final words as his soul departed to seek the rewards of the righteous. And while it greatly grieved Wiglaf to see his kinsmen fall, his slayer lay there too, defeated and dead. No longer would this serpent rule over treasure hoards. No more would he whirl through the air at midnight, countryside. Very few men in the world had ever withstood the venomous blast from such a foe, but Beowulf had won the dragon's hoard and paid for it, his share of the wealth, with his life. Not long afterwards, the cowards who had fled into the woods returned. 10 in number, they shamefully came to where the old man lay, and they looked upon Wiglaf, who was trying to revive his lord with water, but to no avail. Wiglaf addresses the traitors and says, you stand there wearing chainmail and carrying the finest of arms, all given to you by our king. But in his hour of distress, you all abandoned him. And henceforth, you shall all be deprived of your landowner's privileges formerly bestowed upon you by the king. And he ordered that the battle's outcome be announced in the stronghold. A band of mourners proceed to the place where their beloved king had fallen, and they first came upon the loathsome beast, all scorched with flames. 50 feet long, the creature who had at nighttime frolicked through the air now lay lifeless on the sand where their lord had slain him. Never again would he return to the barrow. Nearby, golden bowls, cups, dishes, and precious swords, rusty and decayed as if they had lain in the earth's bosom for 1,000 winters. A spell had been cast upon the vast hoard of gold, the gold of men old, that no one could enter the treasure house unless God himself so willed it. And thus Wiglaf summoned together 7 of the king's best thanes, himself the 8th, and together they gathered to the dragon's hoard, and they loaded gold of every sort and measure beyond measure upon a wagon and carried it away with them. They pushed the dragon's body over the cliff and into the sea and let the waves carry it away. A magnificent pyre was prepared for the great king. Mourning warriors laid their beloved lord in his midst, then kindled the funeral pyre. Wood smoke ascended black above the flames. The roar of fire mingled with the sound of weeping until at last the body was consumed and heavens swallowed the smoke. A Geatish woman sang a sad lament for Beowulf, expressing the fear of evil days ahead. The Geatish people made a mound upon the cliff. It was high and it was broad, and it could be seen from far by seafaring men. And they built a wall around the fire's ashes, the famous warrior's beacon. And within the mound they put the rings, the jewels, and adornments that warriors had taken from the hoard. They thus had returned the treasure to the earth, where it still remains as useless to men now as it was in times of old. 12 warriors, sons of princes, rode about the mound praising their hero's courage and his mighty deeds. And thus the Geatish people mourned their fallen lord. They said that he was once a mighty king, the mildest and kindest of men, most kind to his people, most desirous of praise. This is the tale of Beowulf, as was written down and delivered to us by those who came before us, a tale meant to inspire us. Now, while many would debate the merit of the tale and try to find the greater meaning in it, they would talk about paganism and Christianity fighting for the power over men's souls. They would talk about politics and warfare. But they would miss the mark. The legend of Beowulf isn't about politics. It isn't about warfare. It isn't about religion. The power of this story isn't about any of those things. The power of this story lies in what this story tells us about what we value. And what do we value? We value valor. We value valor, honor, integrity, strength, courage. Inspires courage. It inspires those of us who are strong to stand for those who are weak. It calls for men and women to stand in the gap for those who cannot stand for themselves. It emboldens us to take on the challenges that life will throw at us. The story of Beowulf is a story meant to inspire us that no matter the great challenges life can offer, that we can overcome them. Like Beowulf, we face challenges that we cannot fathom, challenges beyond our understanding. Some of them are physical challenges. Some of them are mental challenges. But they are challenges. Now, yes, it's true. We may not be grappling with dragons and demons and beasts of the fen, or sea monsters. But are our demons any less real than the demons that Beowulf grapples in these pages? I think not. Beowulf is a story about a man who seeks fame and seeks to do what is right. In his dying moments, thinks of his people. In his dying moments, he says, give all that I have won in life to my people. He says, all that I ask is bury me in my funeral mound and let me be remembered for what I've done for my people. All that I have done, I do for them. There's no thought of what's going to happen to all the things I've attained during my life. What's going to happen to all my wealth and all my property? He gives it all to his people. His first concern in his injured state was give all that I have won to my people. For 50 years, I have protected them, I have preserved them, and I have watched over them. And in my death, taken the story of Beowulf and they've looked at various aspects of it and said, look at how he boasts, look at how braggadocious he is, look at how, you know, he's all about himself, he's prideful, he's all about himself. But it ain't pride and it ain't bragging if you can back it up. Beowulf says that he is going to defeat a monster with his bare hands, and he does it. Then he says he's going to kill that monster's mother, and he does it. Then he goes home, and he says he's going to watch over his people, and for 50 years he watches over them, preserves them, protects them, and ensures their future. And in his old age, he's met with a greater challenge than in his life, a challenge that far exceeds anything he's ever done. And he knows in the moment that the challenge is presented to him that he has no chance, no chance of victory. Beowulf knows that this is it. In this final battle, he knows that he is going to die. He knows before he even puts on his armor that this is it for him. But the most important thing about Beowulf is not that he knows that he's going to die, but that he accepts it and that he goes anyway. We have lots of, on my show before, I've talked about superheroes and I've talked about mythical heroes before and what makes these mythical heroes so inspiring and great, and why we still look for superheroes. Why do they inspire us? It's because of their selflessness, right? This is what they represent, the best things in us. Beowulf represents the best aspects of us. Is he prideful? Does he brag? Yes, he is. Yes, he does. But let me ask you, is he really that prideful if he's backing it up? Not really. You've got a lot to be proud of when you're saving people from things that they can't protect themselves from. Even after Beowulf gets all that wealth from Hrothgar, he doesn't even keep it. He gives it to his king. He says, look at these treasures that I've won. Look at all this stuff that the king gave me for killing these monsters for me. I give them to you. Do with them what you will. I did it to help the people. I went for the people. Beowulf went. Yes, he went for glory. Yes, he went for fame, but he went for the people. His first statement when he goes is, I will liberate these people. If we go back to the beginning of this tale, the first thing that Beowulf says when they say, look at, the, you know, there's this monster, it's killing people, Beowulf says, goes, he says, we are of the Geatish kin, Higelac's hearth companions. I am the son of a noble prince. We have come to serve the mighty lord of the Danes. We have heard that some secret destroyer causes great terror among the people on dark nights, and I intend to help you overcome this foe. I have come for the people. Even when he comes to bragging, when he approaches the king, he says, hail to thee, Hrothgar. In my native land, I have learned of Grendel's deeds. Knowing my great strength, my people urged me to come to your aid. And they have seen me. They have seen what I have done. They have seen me return from battle with the blood of my foes staining me. They have seen me destroy a race of monsters and slay sea beasts by night. And now I have come to cleanse Herod of the evil that has come upon it. Furthermore, I have learned that Grendel is a monster who has no fear of weapons, so I shall not fight him with them. He says, even so, I've come. They tell him, when he arrives, they tell him, listen, this thing, Grendel, it's scary. It kills guys. It's killed 30 guys in one night. It's a pretty tough thing. You don't really want to rush into this. And he says, no, I'm here to help people. I'm going to kill this thing. He says, and you know what? It's not afraid of any weapons. Good. It's going to be afraid of me. I'm not even going to use weapons. I'm going to kill it with my bare hands. And if I fail, don't worry about me. If I die, don't even worry about it. Just send my army, or just send all my armaments back to the king. Worry about my death. Send my armor back to the king. I inherited it from my grandfather, and let my king have it. So Beowulf doesn't even think about his own death in this opening part. And now some people have interpreted this as, you know, oh, Beowulf didn't think he could die. Listen, Beowulf knew that he could die. He knew that he could die. And it's not that he didn't think that he would die, didn't think it was possible. He openly states, if I die, don't worry about it. I came here for you. I came to help you. Don't let my death be a hindrance to you. I'm here to help you out. In addition to that, we see multiple moments within the story where Beowulf goes out of his way to make sure that other people don't die. Now, a lot of people are interpreting this as, well, Beowulf just rushed in because he's really arrogant. Well, that could be, or he could know that he's stronger than the rest of his guys, and quite frankly, he doesn't want them to die. In the case where he just rushes in and attacks Grendel, and he tells his men, hey, you know, stay back. I got this, guys. You know, these guys, knew they were seeing something spectacular. In the story, Beowulf proves that he is who he says he is the deliverer of these people. He shows up and he says, I'm gonna save you. I'm here to save the day. And I'm not just going to say I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And he does it. He shows us the importance of integrity. It's not just about saying you're going to do it. It's doing it. Saying you're going to do something is only as good as when you do it. And Beowulf shows that. It ain't bragging if you can back it up. Integrity is something we can take away from Beowulf. He's honest. He's forthright. He tells the truth. And when he says something, he does it. Next, we see courage. Beowulf gives no thought to the dangers of his body. He goes in. He attacks these things head on. He faces these challenges head on. He doesn't even think about it. As soon as he hears the story of Grendel, he gets on a boat, he gets 15 of his buddies, he gets on a boat, he sails over there, and he says, hey guys, we're here to kick some ass. I'm going to kick this thing's ass. Let's do this. Let's kick this thing right in the teeth. Go get her. He gets it done. That's how winning gets done. You've got to be courageous in the face of your challenges. Beowulf demonstrates that. He sees the challenge, and he isn't just courageous in seeking in going to face this challenge. He is seeking the challenge. That's the other thing that we can learn from Beowulf. Seek challenges. Beowulf doesn't just face these challenges with courage. He is going out of his way to seek these challenges. He says, you know what? I've killed giants. I've killed sea monsters. I've killed entire armies of guys. You know what? If this thing wants to mess around with my buddies, I'm going to kick it right in the face. I'm going to go up to it, and I am going to rip its arm off, and I am going to go about my day. That thing is going to feel me tomorrow. Whether I win or lose, that thing is going to remember me. That is the attitude that Beowulf has. He hears a story about a monster that's killing 30 guys at a time, and he says, you know what? Sounds like fun. Let's go kick its ass. You got to love that kind of mentality, mentality that a lot of people don't have today, but it's a mentality we need to get back. That's why this story is important. It's not just because Beowulf is a you know, tough, brawny guy. It's because of what Beowulf does. It's because of what Beowulf says. What he says and what he does is more important than just the other aspects of the story. It's not just about the fact that he kills a dragon or kills a monster. It's the fact that he says he's going to do these things, and he does these things. And it's the reasons that he's doing them for. At the beginning, he goes into it and says, you know what? That guy was a friend of my father. I'm going there. I'm going to help him. We're going to help these people out. They need us. They can't do it on their own. We're going to do it for them. And, you know, you got to think, even though, you know, it's not written in the story, you got to think you're one of those 15 guys that's following Beowulf around. You got to be thinking one of two things. This guy's going to get me killed, or this guy's freaking crazy. Okay? Possibly both of those things. If somebody comes up to you tomorrow and says, hey, listen, there's this guy down the street. He's like 7 foot 10. Yeah, he's 285 pounds. He's solid muscle. He's just a big dude. And listen, I'm going to go fight him. And I want you to come with me. Are you going to go do that? Probably not. If somebody comes to your house and says, listen, we're leaving. There's a guy down there. He's beating people up. We're going to go take care of it. This is the mentality that Beowulf has. He sees someone in need, and he is there to face the challenge. He is going to take the challenge on, can learn from Beowulf. We don't need to get wrapped up in the themes of paganism versus Christianity and, oh, the eloquent poetry. No, what we need to be focused on when we think of these stories, we need to be focused on the qualities of the hero. The qualities of the hero are what make the story and what the writers are trying to get to us. What are they trying to tell us? Why is Beowulf a hero? Why should we even give a damn about Beowulf? What do we care that Beowulf, even whether he existed or not, why should we give a damn? Who cares? It's what Beowulf does and what he says that makes him important. It's what makes the story worth our time. That's what we need to be thinking about. We don't need to be thinking about these other nonsensical things where scholars have gotten into all these debates over, well, it means, you know, this, maybe during the 7th century. Who cares about that? What is the writer telling us is important in this story? What's important to the writer? Why would his audience be entertained by this story? Do they care about the religious conversations of a bunch of dried up old monks and some shaman? They don't give two shit about that. And you know what? Neither do the scholars. They don't care either. Some of them might, but most of them are going to lie and say that they do. They don't care about that. Let me tell you something. Don't get wrapped up in these mythological stories thinking about, well, what's it mean in the context of religion and how can I reconcile it with my faith and, oh, my God. Don't worry about that. When you read these stories, when you are approached with these stories and you read any kind of literary story about a hero, or even for that matter, when you look at religious texts, you don't have to just stomach everything that's given to you. Get the good parts. Get to the core of the story and what's important. What are the values that are within the text? And if you can identify the values that are within these texts and why they are being posited as the values, that tells you more about the story than the whole plot of the story. What are the qualities that Beowulf has? What are they? He's courageous. He's honest. He's dependable. He's loyal. And he cares about people. Five things you can take away from Beowulf. He's honest. He's brave. He cares about people. He sticks to his guns. There you go. There's some things you can take away. Through it again, peoples. There are some major themes you can take away from Beowulf. Be honorable. Demonstrate integrity. If you say something, if you say you're going to do it, do it. Be courageous. Stand up for people. Stand up for yourself. Face your challenges head on. Be generous. Give to those less fortunate than you when you can. Generosity. Be kind. The strongest people in the world are kind people. Beowulf may be strong enough to rip the arm off of a giant, but he was calm enough and kind enough to care about the people he was helping. And lastly, probably most importantly, Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to be everything you know you can be. Be you. That is what Beowulf teaches us. Be yourself. Be a good person, but be yourself. Be true to yourself. Be honest and forthright. And don't let anything stop you from pursuing what you want to pursue. That's the true lesson of Beowulf. That is all you need to know when you read the tale of Beowulf. It doesn't matter how many monsters he kills or how many, you know, debates there are about what's he talking about. Who cares what he was bound to? Who cares about the politics? This is what's important. These are the things that are important about Beowulf. What he says, what he does. And that is the true lesson you can take away from all of this. When you think about what you say and what you do, can you measure yourself to Beowulf? Can. Then you're doing it right. But if you can't, it's time to step it up. Face your challenge. Go out and kick it in the teeth. Be yourself. Be proud of that. Be loyal. Be dependable. Stick to your word. Be courageous. Be daring. Don't fear the challenge. All I've got for you today, I hope you learned a lot about Beowulf. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you're interested in reading Beowulf, there are a number of copies of it. There's actually even a book you can get of the story from Grendel's perspective. It's called Grendel. But you can get, I mean, just type in Beowulf online. You can get multiple versions of it. It's been I know you can download it for free from the Gutenberg Press Library online as well if you're interested in it. It's not a long story. I basically read the entire thing to you. It's just very, very straightforward read, very easy. Don't get caught up in the names. Some of the names can be a little bit hard to pronounce. Don't worry about that. But I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Another announcement for you guys. Obviously, Strict Football Talk is back, so I will be there Sunday. But, guys, next week I am going to be giving you guys some samples from my new work in addition to doing my show. So I hope you guys will stick around for that. Those of you who have been listening, I hope you guys enjoy that. I am going to be doing some sample readings from my new work, Iscariot Song, which is now available on Amazon. As always, guys, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, and I hope you learned something today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Till I see you all again, till we get to speak again, guys, remember today, be daring, be courageous, and be about it. Don't talk about it. Be about it.